We are gathering here because of we have a risen Savior, because He has accomplished everything that needs to be accomplished on the cross. And that has been sealed, certified as accomplished for us by the power of God in raising Christ up from the dead. And we're going to be looking this morning in Mark 1. We're coming to an account that may not seem to have much to do with the resurrection, and yet as we go through it, hopefully we'll see that it actually has quite a bit to do with the power of Christ, the victory of Christ that has been accomplished for us. We see here in this account a precursor to the greater work that Christ is going to do. So Mark chapter 1, we're going to look at the last six verses, beginning in verse 40. And it says, "And there came a leper to him, beseeching him and kneeling down to him, and saying unto him, If thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. And Jesus, moved with compassion, put forth his hand and touched him, and said unto him, I will, be thou clean. And as soon as he had spoken, immediately the leprosy departed from him, and he was cleansed. And he straitly charged him, and forthwith sent him away, and saith unto him, See thou say nothing to any man, but go thy way. Show thyself to the priest, and offer for thy cleansing those things which Moses commanded for testimony unto them. But he went out, and began to publicize it much, and to blaze abroad the matter, insomuch that Jesus could no more openly enter into the city, but was without in desert places, and they came to him from every quarter." As we've gone through the book of Mark, we've seen so far that Christ has gone into the region of Capernaum. He has called his disciples to himself. He has begun teaching in the synagogues. And there in the synagogue, he healed and cast out a demon from a demon-possessed man. He left there, went to Peter's house, and there healed Peter's mother-in-law. The whole town found out what had happened and just flocked to Peter's door, so that Christ went out into the city and began healed all manner of diseases, cast out many devils, as it says in verse 34, and he was continued to minister. And as the crowds continued to follow him in Capernaum, Christ said, I can't stay here. I need to go forth and go to other communities, other cities, and preach the gospel. And so he goes throughout all of that region. It's called the region of Galilee. If you remember, if you can picture in your mind at all the little maps in the back of your Bible, you have the Sea of Galilee. And if you remember a few weeks ago, I mentioned that Sea of Galilee is about the size of Indian Lake. So it's not a really big big area there. So if you know Indian Lake, you know that area there where all the campgrounds are, the west side, the west shore there, and where 149 and Old 2 come through, that would be roughly the region of Galilee. If that kind of helps you put it in perspective at all. That area there where the campgrounds are, there'd be a lot of little communities. And you'd have some, you know, out by Linda's Bread Box and little communities all around there. And that was that region that Christ was ministering all throughout and is doing all of these great miracles throughout that region. And as he is there ministering, somewhere in that area, there came a leper to him. And leprosy, it was a very common disease, especially in ancient times in the Middle East and in Africa. It has been successfully kept at bay in most parts of the world, but even today there are certain places in Africa that still feel the disastrous effects of this disease. And leprosy in ancient times was actually a pretty broad diagnosis. It was used to describe many different skin diseases, some of them really no more serious than a rash. But not all leprosies were mild, and some varieties of it were absolutely deadly. And so that which we today diagnose as leprosy would probably have been the same as the chronic and the severe cases that we find mentioned in the Bible. And so that even though today we have treatments for leprosy, leprosy in Bible times was a death sentence. There was no way around it. You were going to die from leprosy if you contracted this chronic and severe variety. And it was a horrible death. I'm not going to describe for you the horrible effects of leprosy. They're in fact quite disgusting. But in general, the leper was disfigured by his disease. He lost digits. The cartilage on his body would rot away. The skin was diseased. The natural hair fell out and was replaced by thin, stringy strands. The nerves in the extremities began to die, which often resulted in the loss of hands and feet. And so to contract leprosy was to contract a long and a torturous death. The Old Testament, just to help us see this, gives us two examples where the leper was considered as one already dead. If we go back to Numbers chapter 12, Miriam has taken part in, that's Moses' sister Miriam, has taken part in a rebellion against Moses. And as a result, she gets leprosy. Aaron pleads with Moses for their sister Miriam's cure. And in that, Aaron asks, let her not be as one dead. The view of the one that had leper was they were one already dead. The view of a leper was there was one already dead. Not just metaphorically that they were cast out and didn't have much to do with the community, but literally they were already dead. There was no hope for them. In 2 Kings chapter 5, we see the account of a captain in the Syrian army that came down with leprosy. And he learned of a prophet in Israel who might be able to cure him. And so this Syrian captain, Naaman, went to the king of Israel and there presented a letter to the king asking the king to cure him. The king of Israel's response really summarizes how leprosy was viewed. The king of Israel said, "Am I God to kill and to make alive that this man descend unto me to recover a man from leprosy?" You see the connection in both those instances there was leprosy is a death sentence. To cure someone from leprosy was essentially to bring someone back alive from the dead. So as we go through this account in Mark today, keep that in mind. But that's not all that we have to say about leprosy, because it was more than just a vile disease that left its victims condemned to a horrible death. In Israel, leprosy also had profound spiritual effects. The leper was unclean. Now, uncleanness is that which makes somebody unfit to offer sacrifices, unfit to join in the congregational worship, or to participate in any of the national feasts. So that one that is unclean could not come before God in any fashion. They were completely removed from any of the worship of God. So a leper could never offer sacrifice for his sin. He could never come to the temple. He could never join with the people in their worship of God. But not only that, anyone who touched the leper, who came into any kind of physical contact, became unclean himself. So that for a short period of time, it wasn't permanent, but for a short period of time, one who came in contact with a leper was forbidden to join in the sacrifices and the feast and the worship of God. And so because of this, in these cases of the chronic and severe leprosy, the leper was commanded to cover his mouth with a cloth and to cry out, "Unclean, unclean." Because of this, the leper was forbidden to live in the cities and towns of Israel. Instead, he had to live alone away from any human habitation. He was, and again, in the Old Testament, in the nation of Israel, that had a direct impact upon his ability to worship. And so leprosy was a horrible disease that brought physical and spiritual suffering on its victim. Leprosy was a bondage to death that could not be escaped. There was no cure for leprosy. Sometimes the lesser varieties of these skin diseases would heal themselves, but full-blown leprosy was incurable. So the leper was doomed to a hopeless existence of suffering and separation from God and his fellow man. Don't think I can at all paint the picture too bleak. This man that comes to Jesus is in the worst possible condition. He is
on the verge of certain death. He is cut off from any human contact. He is cut off from any participation in the worship of his God. And what we see here today, especially as we remember Jesus' victory over death, we see him overthrow the cause of certain death. And I know this account in Mark chapter 1 is not the typical place we turn to when we think about Jesus' resurrection, but I think as we consider this, it will be very informative in helping us consider some of the implications of Jesus' resurrection. Because what we see here in Mark chapter 1 is the precursor to the great work which Christ was come to do. We see here a precursor to Jesus' work that would defeat death. Because we do celebrate Jesus' resurrection for more reasons than just that he was restored to life. And it is certainly glorious that Jesus died in our place and then was restored to life by the infinite power of God. But the resurrection is more than just an amazing display of God's power. The resurrection is God's power at work on our behalf. It is God's power at work for His people. The resurrection is the certification by God that Jesus is victorious. The resurrection is the confirmation that sin and all of its consequences have been defeated. Death is the last enemy that will be finally destroyed, but it has already been overthrown. Colossians 2 tells us Christ defeated all of our spiritual enemies and then paraded their defeat before all of the world. That parade of his victory was in the resurrection. It tells us that because of the resurrection, Jesus is death's conqueror, who has now turned the believer's death into believer's victory. And turning the whole thing on its head. Because of the resurrection, we have the certain promise by God that all who turn to Jesus for salvation will be delivered from bondage to sin and death. Because just like the leper, we are each one of us in soul-crushing bondage to the disease of sin. A disease that is certainly more foul than I care to describe. And just like the leper is chained to certain death and there was no hope of a cure, we as well are chained to certain death and unable to render ourselves a cure. But just as certainly as Jesus delivered this leper from certain death and spiritual destitution, he will certainly deliver all of those who will cry out to him and deliver them from spiritual death and the certain destitution that comes with it. And so as we come this morning to this account, I want us to look at it and see the means by which this great deliverance is accomplished. And the first thing we see here is the leper's cry. In verse 40, it tells us, "If thou will, thou canst make me clean." He comes to Christ, and Luke tells us that this man was full of leprosy. So this is not just a case of a mild skin irritation. He didn't get road burn and was coming asking for healing. Luke, the physician, says he was full of leprosy, consumed by the horrible infection. He has heard of the many great miracles that Jesus has done, and he comes to him. He doesn't avoid Jesus. He doesn't stay away from him. He doesn't cry out and stand aside and say, "I'm unclean, I'm unclean." The poor leper comes to Jesus. He bows down before him. He worships him, as Matthew tells us, and he pleads for healing. It's just very simple. This leper comes and humbles himself before Jesus. You can see him there bowing in the dirt and bowing in the street, pleading with Jesus. He just comes and humbles himself. He doesn't hide behind a tree and say, "Hey, come over here. Let me talk to you over here where nobody can see me." He certainly doesn't put on any kind of a tough man act and try to pass his disease off as something minor and no big deal. He just comes and it says bowing. I really don't think he come and very stately and sedately crawled down on his knees and just kind of sat and sat there very upright, but on his knees before him. I imagine he comes and just throws himself at Jesus' feet. I imagine he just almost groveling in the dirt, humbly before the only one that could possibly give him deliverance. And his request is, it's a personal request. He says, if you will, you can make me clean. And the leper comes, and he doesn't acknowledge anything particularly. And he doesn't come to Jesus and say, he doesn't acknowledge that Jesus is God. He doesn't say specifically that, you can do anything you want in the world. He doesn't confess that he's heard of the great miracles done across the region. The leper didn't even proclaim that Jesus could heal all leprosy across Israel. He doesn't come and make some generic, sweeping, wide-ranging statement about Jesus. He didn't confess that all men were sick and that Jesus is able to heal all men. He comes and he just makes it real personal. If you will, you can make me clean. That's the whole scope right there. Two people. Jesus, leper. And that is it. He's focused on the need. He's crying out for personal deliverance. He's not just making sweeping observations about Jesus' power. It's a humble, passionate request for personal salvation. And we see in this just incredible faith. The leper believed something very simple and yet very profound. Because he says, if you will, you can make me clean. He's putting it all at Jesus' feet. He's just stating his faith in the power and compassion of Jesus. The leper knows full well there is no cure for his disease. He knows there's no doctor in the world that can cleanse his disease from his flesh. There's no priest in the world that can make him fit to come before God. Yet he comes to Jesus and confesses that Jesus has the power to make him clean. His faith, as I said, it's simple, but it's incredibly profound. He believes fully in Jesus, is able to cleanse him. And let me make one passing observation on this. Because each of the first three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, include this account of the healing of the leprous man. And all of them use the phrase, make me clean. As I've already said, the leper was unclean. Not unclean in the sense of dirty and disease, though that was true. He was unclean in that he was unable to save and unable to have any part in the worship of God. This man knew he could not come before God. And that's what he cries out for. He cries out for cleansing. And there is a very definite word that is being used here. He's not just saying, you can heal me. He's saying, you can cleanse me. And the thing that apparently grieves him most is his inability to come to God. And he knows not only that Jesus can remove the disease, but that Jesus can remove the stain that comes along with it. He comes to Jesus and humbly begs to be made clean. And Christ, our Savior, gives an incredible response. It's just a splendid response to this poor man's cry. As it tells us, Jesus, verse 41, moved with compassion. He is moved with compassion. I don't know if you can imagine this. This leper bowing in the dust at Jesus' feet. This man certainly stinks. He is deformed so that the look on his face is to see the ravages of the disease. He is clothed in tattered rags. He's probably bleeding and oozing foul fluids. The common response to such a man is going to be revulsion. It's going to be back away. Step aside. Get away. This man is just, it turns your stomach. I mean, he would have been literally disgusting to the point of turning many, many stomachs. But Jesus is not moved with disgust or revulsion. He was moved with compassion. Go back to Luke 15. Turn over there if you will. Because this compassion, it wasn't just a little bit of pity. It wasn't just he felt sorry for the guy. I mean, we're not describing the kind of compassion that you may feel when you see a starving African child on TV and you think, that's so sad. This is a heart-wrenching compassion that responds swiftly to the one in need. In Luke chapter 15, we see the same phrase. Luke 15, Jesus tells the story of the prodigal son. There, that son takes half his father's wealth. He goes into a distant city. He blows all of that money on every variety of wicked living that he can find. The son finds himself in a destitute condition, so destitute that he hires himself out to feed hogs and is so hungry that he's ready to begin eating the corn husks that he's feeding the pigs. He comes to his senses and realizes that he's being an absolute idiot, and he intends to go back home and to beg his father to hire him on as a servant. Let me continue the story in verse 20. And he, that is the prodigal son, arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him and had compassion, that is, moved with compassion, and ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. That's the kind of compassion Christ had for this leper. So go back to Mark chapter 1. He's not repulsed. He's not turned away by this one that is most vile. As the father runs to his repentant son, so Jesus goes to the men in the worst possible condition. His heart quakes for them. He is wrenched and grieved for them. And he moves to minister to this man in the depth of his need. So much so that we see Jesus do something that really is, again, unthinkable. Jesus was moved with compassion, put forth his hand, and touched him. I wish you could really help us understand and viscerally understand how significant this is. I mean, this leper was unclean. To touch him was to become unclean as well. This leper was infectious. To touch him was to risk infection as well. This leper was gross. To touch him was to risk being fouled as well. None of these things moved Jesus. Instead, he is moved by compassion. He reaches out and he touches this poor man. He's probably not felt human contact for years. Christ reaches out and touches this poor man. And then he says, I will. Be thou clean. Simple interaction here. Very, very simple, straightforward. If you will, you can make me clean. I will be clean. That's it. I mean, that is the extent of the dialogue. This whole scene could take place in just a minute. And yet it is an incredible, powerful scene. Christ in his love says, I will be clean. So far in the book of Mark, we have seen a demon cast out by the command of Jesus. We have seen a fever cast out by the command of Jesus. And here we see leprosy cast out by the command of Christ. And Mark's point is the same. It's always been this throughout and will be throughout the book. Jesus is God the Son. Jesus is the Messiah sent to deliver men from sin. As God, as the Messiah, he is powerful to deliver from bondage to demon, from all diseases, and from certain death. Jesus cleanses this man with a touch and a word. And immediately the leprosy departed from him. The change was instantaneous, and it was very apparent. At Jesus' command, the leprosy fled, left this man cleansed and whole. And if I can just take an aside for just a second, and as we think of Christ's incredible compassion here, it doesn't stop just with those who are diseased. It doesn't stop just with those who have physical difficulties. Far more importantly, Christ is moved with compassion on all men. So there is absolutely none that is so vile that he cannot come to Christ. There is none that is so deep in sin or so far gone in wickedness that Christ would turn his back on him, that Christ would step away and say, oh, that's just gross. There is none that is so far gone that he is beyond the power of Christ. There is none that is so far gone that Christ says, you know what, I can forgive most things, but that one, that's a little bit much. There is none that is so enslaved or so chained to sin or so deep in darkness that it cannot be delivered. So that at his command, Christ, this man's life was turned upside down, and at Christ's command, the worst of men can be absolutely transformed because of Jesus' work. And as soon as this man is healed, verse 43, Jesus gives him a couple commands. He instructs the leper to not say anything to anybody else, but to go directly to the priest and there fulfill the requirements of the law for one who had leprosy. And these commands are important, and we don't particularly have time to go into them this morning. So let me just mention two things. At this point, Jesus is restraining the spreading of the wonderful accounts of his miracles. This is early in his ministries, and I think it's a desire to not have the wonders he performs outrun his teaching. As we saw last week, that's his focus, is the preaching. And so he's not interested in drawing a huge following looking for a great event or another mighty deed. His mission is the proclamation of the gospel. And so he instructs the man to be quiet about his healing. The second thing he did is Jesus tells him to go and obey the law. Jesus remains completely obedient to the law. Galatians chapter 4 tells us that Jesus was born under the law. And even though we know he is the fulfillment of the law, and we know the work he did on the cross replaces the old law with a new covenant, he submitted himself to the law of Moses. And he has submitted himself to the same commands that the other Israelites were under. And so this leper, Jesus tells him, go follow the laws. Moses had given very specific commands regarding a leper that had been healed. And so Jesus says, go follow the law. Go fulfill those commands. And we see again, just a glimpse here, but we see again, Jesus is fully God, the Messiah sent from God to save men from sin. He has entered fully into the human condition. He is the giver of the law, who now submits himself to the law, who now is putting himself under the same obligations that the other Israelites are under. And the last thing I want to point out just briefly this morning from this passage is this leper's response. Verse 45, it says, but the leper went out and began to publish it much and to blaze abroad the matter, insomuch that Jesus could no more openly enter into the city. Now, I think the leper probably did eventually make his way to the priest as he was instructed, but he really didn't do a very good job of being quiet. I mean, Mark seems to take some pains to tell you just how much this guy talked about it. He goes out and he published it much and he blazed abroad the message. I mean, I think we can probably excuse such an exuberant response. I mean, the guy has been delivered from certain death, and I imagine if that was the case for us, we would be a little bit excited about it. This guy goes out, this former leper goes really from crying out for healing to crying out in praise. I can just imagine him here, see him running through town, running into people and proclaiming to everybody the good news of what had just happened to him. And I can just imagine him running through the streets shouting for joy, telling everyone he knew and everyone he didn't know just how completely he had been healed. And he goes out, and he may not have been evangelistic in the sense of giving the gospel of Jesus, but he was certainly evangelistic in the sense of proclaiming the good news of what Jesus has done for him, so that from this man, the story races through the streets and races through the city, so much so that everyone knows about it. This man wasn't at all restrained in his message. He told everybody. And the result is Jesus is enabled to go openly into the cities. The crowds were so great, pressed on him so much, that he has to remain out away from the towns, in the wilderness and deserted places. And so the crowds are coming to him. And it says they came to him from every quarter, from all around. They flocked to Jesus. And what we see just in this very brief account, it's the same that Mark has been showing: the power, authority, and compassion of Jesus as God the Son. And more particularly for our understanding today, we see a man under the sentence of death, fully delivered by Jesus. We find in this account really a picture of the work that Jesus accomplished in his death and resurrection. We see in the cleansing of this man from spiritual destitution and certain death the precursor to Jesus' work of cleansing men from their spiritual death and destitution. And because Christ is alive, that's the whole point. It's not just Christ died. He died for our sin. In his death, he took our place. He died instead of us, paying the full punishment of our sin. But it doesn't stop there. And because it doesn't stop there, we have the certainty that the great work that has been begun will be fully accomplished in us. We will be delivered from this body of death because Jesus has already defeated death. So in the Trinity, we see in the resurrection, we see the Trinity moving with inconceivable might to finish and certify the redemption of man. We see Jesus in his incarnation take on humanity's weakness. As we saw last week, he and even this week we glimpsed it. He touches man and man's infirmity. He comes in close. He knows it himself. And by him taking on himself the weakness of man, he dies to bring men to glory. Because he was willing to suffer and die, he defeated death. And the most mind-boggling thing, at least to me, the most mind-boggling thing is he has turned certain death and the punishment of sin into deliverance and the glorious entrance into eternal joy. We see this leper here, just by way of a quick analogy. He is there in the worst possible condition. He comes to Christ. Christ delivers him, cleanses him. His certain death, his destitution, his misery and woe, all of that was so wretched is transformed, and now he goes out and it is the most glorious of praise. Now he goes out and says, I was a leper. Now I'm healed. I had no nose. Look, it's there. He delivered me. And in this much greater fashion, because Christ has risen from the dead, this death that is the sentence of sin is no longer punishment for the believer. It is now the entrance into heaven. It is now the promised end of putting off this corruptible and putting off this mortal and the putting on of the incorruptible and the immortal. Because Jesus has risen from the dead, our mortality is swallowed up in life. Or as Paul tells Timothy, our Savior Jesus Christ has abolished death and brought life and immortality to light through the gospel. That's what we're talking about. The abolition of death, the abolition of the cause of death, the abolition of bondage and to death, and the entrance into life and immortality through the light of the gospel. And this is why we would say something like, Happy Easter, or rejoice, Christ is risen.